the bell sucker. This is Movie Fighters, the show where Chris Sims and I, Matt Wilson, we watch movies and beat them up. And on this episode, we are kicking off a spooky October. Spooktoberfest, we call it. By watching the direct-to-video 1996 adaptation of comic character Vampirella.
Now, Matt. Oh, wait, no, hang on. Let me do my spooky voice. Now, Matt, you say that it was direct-to-video, but I don't actually think that was the case. I seem to remember from being someone who really wanted to see a Vampirella movie in 1996 because I was 14 years old. I seem to remember this movie being a Showtime original.
Perhaps. I'm going by the IMDb distinction next to it's video 1996, which could mean, I guess that's their distinction for TV movies as well.
Mm-hmm. I gotta say, this is a movie. I'm glad we're finally doing this one, even though we've gotten a lot of suggestions from listeners, from friends, from my girlfriend who wanted us to watch Halloween Town and Halloween Town 2, Calabar's Revenge, two Disney Channel original movies. We got a lot of great suggestions, and I think we're going to be following some of those for our second Spooktoberfest feature. But this is a movie that we have been wanting to do for a long time, going back to when Matt and I were doing themed movie reviews at Comics Alliance. Whenever we would finish a set, because we would do them by themes, like we did, I guess it was Mary and I finished up with all the Blade movies. And then what did you and I start with, Matt? What was our first one? Do you remember?
My first one was Superman 3, but that was with Uzumeri. Right. I think I maybe came in on the Ninja Turtles movies.
That sounds right. That sounds right. So we did all the Ninja Turtles movies. We did like Rocketeer and those.
Yeah.
Or did we end up doing those for?
We did Rocketeer
for this show.
We did Rocketeer for Comics Alliance. I remember that.
But Vampirella was one of those that we, like, I would put up a poll each time to see what people wanted us to do next, and I would organize them by theme. And a lot of the movies that we never got to do there, like the Pulp Heroes set was one that we never got to do at Comics Alliance. Vampirella was in there. I forget what theme it was. It was probably in there with, like, Hellboy.
Well, we also
this kind of horror-y movies.
Yeah, we also considered doing this because we would break from the themes to do a horror movie or two in October, as we do for Movie Fighters. And we tried to do this movie and had some great difficulty finding it. And thus we ended up doing Blood Rain instead, which is available was available then via Netflix.
Yes.
We finally managed to get our hands on this one. And what I think is extra interesting about us doing this movie is this our first, like, full-on comics adaptation for Movie Fighters. Like, I guess The Phantom probably falls into that category too. But it's the first, like, character that you can totally trace back to comic books, something we did on Comics Alliance all the time that mm-hmm. we're doing for Movie Fighters. It's our most Comics Alliance-y Movie Fighters yet, I think.
Yeah, it definitely is. Now, we should say, though, this movie stars Talisa Soto, who was best known as a model, but she also did some acting. Now, Matt, this is not the first time we've seen her.
That's right. We've seen her in both Mortal Kombat movies.
Right. Mortal Kombat 1 and 2 as Kitana.
She was Kitana, yes.
I was aware of this movie when it was being made and when it came out. Now, were you at all?
Not in the least. So everything about this is surprising to me. The fact that Roger Daltrey is in this.
I did forget that.
Lead singer of The Who. He has an original song in this movie.
That's amazing.
Although he didn't write it. He just performs it. It's called Bleed For Me. Angus Scrimm, who is the stalwart tall man from Movie Fighter's favorite series, Phantasm. is in this.
Which, amazingly, we have never done for our Halloween movies.
We've talked about it. We've talked about it 100 times.
That's not even our, like, a Movie Fighter's favorite. That's a Chris favorite and a Matt favorite series
yeah,
of movies.
That's true. That's just personal favorites of both of ours.
Phantasm is a year-round thing, everybody. Phantasm is actually, like, the scariest movie I like.
Phantasm is eternal. I remember when our mutual friend RJ White, co-host of the Columbo podcast, Just One More Thing, was doing the Fake Criterion's Tumblr. My first and only Fake Criterion cover that I made for him was for Phantasm. Because I think that movie is Criterion worthy and deserves to be in the Criterion collection.
I mean, look, we're going to talk about Vampirella, but Phantasm is so great.
All right, so
Matt, it's the only science fiction horror movie with balls.
Yes, that's true.
Go watch the trailer for Phantasm 3 if you think I'm just being weird.
Now, I don't have any real connection to this movie. I had no awareness of it as it was being made or released or anything like that. I also have no particular connection to Vampirella, the comics character. I've read maybe a few stories with Vampirella, a few comic stories, but not a ton. She's been in kind of that subsection of comics that I've just not, like, I never dove into for whatever reason. Chris, do you have more of a comics connection to Vampirella?
I think I've got more than you.
Yeah.
But I'm not, like, a huge Vampirella fan. I do think Vampirella, and this is going to be something that's evident by just the era that this movie came out, Vampirella is a character who I think was really hard done by the 90s. In that, you know, Vampirella first appears in the 70s in the scary magazine format. You know, the same kind of magazine that you got Savage Sword of Conan or Rampaging Hulk, like any of those, that because they were magazines were exempt from the comics code. So you could do things that you couldn't necessarily do in, like, mainstream superhero comics because they were just a magazine. And Vampirella is originally, like, a combination between a lead character and a hostess. You know, she's kind of like the Crypt Keeper in some of those stories. But she's also this weird monster from the planet Draculon, where water has the consistency of blood. In the 90s, there was the bad girl craze.
Right.
That brought us Lady Death, Vampirella, she... Like, there was a big resurgence of Vampirella in that.
There was also just a big resurgence of heroines who wore almost nothing.
Yes.
In the vein of your Witchblades, for instance.
Yes. I will say, I am very excited about the Nicola Scott redesign for Vampirella that just came out from Dynamite. And I am... Like, I think it's great. I think it's... genuinely sexy while still being a little more practical. But I do think Vampirella's original costume, the costume that we are going to see in this movie, is great. Like, Vampirella's costume, it's over-the-top ridiculous, but I think in those 70s stories, there's kind of an acknowledgement that it's over-the-top ridiculous. It's a weird costume.
You know what my favorite thing about the costume is?
That it has the logo right on her crotch?
That is one thing. But the main thing is the collar. Because that's how you know she's a vampire.
Yes, it's great. It's great. A lot of the Vampirella stories that I've read are from that 90s era when, you know, they're very violent, they're very bloody, they're very sexy. But they're also stories that are like Kurt Busiek and Grant Morrison and Mark Miller and Warren Ellis were writing Vampirella stories at that time. You know, Amanda Connor drew a lot of those Vampirella stories. They're really, you know, weird little hidden gems. And I mean weird. The one where she goes and fights the evil Vatican that's underneath the Vatican, where the vampire pope lives, wearing a costume made of pieces of the True Cross. That's a weird story. It's a really weird story.
That's some Assassin's Creed shit. Right there.
Yes. But I think this movie... No, I have seen this movie before, but I saw it in 1996. So this movie, I don't think does as much with that as you kind of want it to.
Its current IMDb rating is 3.7, which is not giving me a lot of hope. But what does give me hope is the tagline on what you might, I guess it's the poster or the DVD cover. Mm-hmm. The tagline is, "Thirsty for justice, she'll settle for blood."
That's genuinely great.
That's some pulpy exploitation movie kind of stuff. It gives me high hopes for something that I feel like we're probably not going to get. But
I remember being a little disappointed by this movie. But again, I saw it in 1996 on Showtime. Like, I stayed up late to watch it with the promise of sexy vampire action. So my standards when I was 14 are a little different than the standards I have now. Believe it or not, I know it's hard to believe given that I like the same stuff I've liked for 30 years. But I'm interested to see if it holds up as a B movie in the way that like that Blood Rain almost did.
Blood Rain, it's the closest Uwe Boll movie to being a movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's hope that we get at least that from Vampirella. One other thing I should note before we get to the movie is that the creator of Vampirella, Forrest Ackerman, actually does appear in this movie. There's a character named for him, and then he is actually in it as well, in a little cameo. So this movie did have the blessing of the creator of Vampirella. I don't know if that means anything, but he's in this. All right. It's time, before we get started on the movie, to do the most blockbuster popular segment on Movie Fighters.
The hottest new segment on Movie Fighters, and I think in podcasting in general.
Snack situation. Chris, what are you snacking on for Vampirella?
Well, Matt, as you know, it is Spooktoberfest. It is Halloween. It is the month of Halloween right now.
Yes.
Very excited about the month of Halloween. I put my decorations up yesterday. Now, I will say food-wise, I availed myself of the new McDonald's all-day breakfast menu earlier.
Wonderful.
Which all praises to whatever being allows us to live in a world with all-day McDonald's breakfast.
The golden arches. The god of the golden arches.
As far as snacking here, I have what I would say is a traditional Halloween-type snack. I have, and it's a traditional movie snack, too. I have some chocolate-covered raisins with sea salt caramel-flavored coating, which I got at a Publix yesterday.
So a little quality step up from your old-fashioned raisinettes. These are
right. Just a little. These were bought from a store. They were next to some dried vegetables, which I also bought. But today is a lazy Sunday of movie fighting. So
that's right. What I have is a bag of treats that I might give out to trick-or-treaters, but are probably a little too nice to give and are not individually wrapped. But I'm excited about them. They are some Trader Joe's milk chocolate-covered peanut butter pretzels. Now, you may be familiar with the regular peanut butter pretzels, just like a cube of pretzel with some peanut butter inside. These are the chocolate-covered version of that.
I almost bought those yesterday. They were on the shelf next to the chocolate raisins.
Yeah, these look good.
And I looked at those and thought, well, those are a little over the top.
I'm doing it. All right, that's our snack situation. We are about to watch Vampirella. As far as we are aware, there is no streaming option for this movie. You can get it for fairly cheap on DVD on Amazon. So if you want to do that, that is the only way I know of to watch this movie currently. If you'd like to watch along, that is your prerogative. Otherwise, we're going to hit pause, we're going to watch the movie, you'll hear a musical interlude, and we'll be back to talk about it. And we are back from watching Vampirella from 1996. Ooh, ooh boy.
That's a bad movie, Matt.
I'm on the fence as to whether it was worse than Blood Rain.
I would say yes.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yeah, I would say that was... I would say that, like... I mean, look, it's been a few years since we've watched Blood Rain, and this is a very fresh wound.
Yeah, but at least Blood Rain had Billy Zane and Ben Kingsley. Super slumming it, right? But
yeah, yeah.
But, you know, kind of classing up the joint nonetheless. Vampirella has Roger Daltrey just being awful.
Here's something that we didn't mention. Is this our first actual Roger Corman movie?
Well, we didn't notice that it was executive produced by Roger Corman until we watched the credits, the opening credits,
yeah.
And we noticed his name. To my knowledge, yes, this is the first movie where Roger Corman is credited that we have watched.
To be fair, it was directed by Jim Wynorski. Who you may know as the director of Chopping Mall, of Deathstalker 2, and the upcoming Sharkensaw Women's Prison Massacre, which I'm assuming is about sharks attacking a women's prison in Kansas, or in Arkansas.
Could be Kansas. Could be throwing us off. You never know. But yes, that is his oeuvre.
Yeah, this was bad. This was rough. And it was worse than I remembered, which is surprising.
It doesn't even feel up to the level of, like, a Showtime original movie. Its production values are, like, just barely Star Trek The Next Generation level.
Not even.
Yeah.
Not even. Like, that opening scene, maybe. But the rest of the show, not even. Like, Star Trek The Next Generation at least had, like, you know, they spent their money on showing you the ship flying through space.
Right. Certainly,
which is
yeah.
Why every planet that they went to looked like a spa.
This definitely does not do as well as The Next Generation on the space special effects.
Oh, the space effects are rough.
But the opening scene, which takes place on the planet Draculon 4,000 years ago, where we see High Elder Angus Scrim telling his adopted daughter, Ella, about the great, you know, moral and ethical, you know, standards of the people of Draculon. And how, you know, we've got to have justice and peace. And he's trying to teach her, like, the basic tenets of morality right here at the beginning of this movie as they are going down a moving walkway like they're at the airport.
It looks exactly like they're in an airport, but like a cool airport. There's some, like, purple lighting in it.
Yeah.
As far as the effects in this movie, and specifically the space effects, there is a scene that is set on the planet Mars where two astronauts are walking around just clearly. One of them, by the way, is John Landis.
Yeah, John Landis in a very weird... It's even a little more than a cameo, because he has a few lines.
Yeah, he has a speaking part. He has a minor role, but I would call it a cameo.
It's sort of like David Cronenberg popping up in Jason X. But yeah, John Landis is one of two astronauts who lands on Mars so that Vampirella can stow away on their ship.
But they are clearly walking around just in painter's coveralls and helmets because you can see their shoes, and one of them is literally just wearing Timberlands.
Yeah.
Timberlands, I guess. He's not wearing the rapper Timbaland.
He's not wearing Timbaland of Timbaland and Magoo fame. I don't think John Landis is one of those, is in that suit. I think John Landis's part in the movie is just like the brief speaking part where they're supposed to be on the space shuttle. I mean, maybe he's in one of those suits. I don't know. But it's so weird. It's so weird that he's in this. Like, maybe he's just a big Vampirella fan, I guess.
It's got to be, like, either he's a friend. Like, is he one of those guys that came up under Roger Corman?
I know he got his start on, like, the Kentucky Fried Movie and stuff like that. I don't know if Roger Corman had anything to do with that or not. But he's got to have some kind of connection, I guess.
Yeah, like either him or Forrest Ackerman.
Yeah, maybe he's just like a big Vampirella fan or a big, you know, Warren comics guy. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah. It is super weird that he's in this movie as an astronaut. Back to Draculon, where the movie starts. After we get that opening scene where, you know, we establish that Angus Scrimm and Ella are like, you know, the pillars of justice and moral goodness on
Matt,
the planet.
Matt, I'm sorry, did you mention this is not only on the planet Draculon, but on Draculon 30 centuries ago?
It's 4,000 years ago is where okay. It starts.
Just making sure.
It takes them 1,000 years to get to Earth, and then Vampirella's on Mars for 3,000 years, so Roger Daltrey and his people have 3,000 years to, like, create all vampire myth on Earth. But as they're talking, we cut to a jail cell where some Draculon police officers, soldiers, are pulling Roger Daltrey, whose character is named Vlad, out of a jail cell. And the first thing we see Roger Daltrey do is he just, like, jumps up and tries to freak out the soldiers. But instead, it just looks like the goofiest fucking thing. Everything Roger Daltrey does is so goddamn goofy, and not in a fun, appealing way, in a, how is he this bad? How is a guy who has been as famous for as long as Roger Daltrey has been, how can he be this bad?
There is a scene of Roger Daltrey literally as a musician playing guitar and singing a rock and roll song, and it's the least convincing performance I've ever seen.
Yeah, how is he so bad at portraying a rock musician?
Yeah, like, how?
Ugh.
Like, because that's a thing, I'm not going to lie, that's a thing Roger Daltrey is very good at.
Yeah. The Who was and remains a pretty good band, and, like, one of the most famous rock bands in the world.
I would say that it is Roger Daltrey's greatest skill to be a rock and roll man.
He can't pull it off.
Does not pull it off.
Crazy. But so they pull him out of this jail cell and they take him in front of a tribunal to be put on trial. And it's this set that I said looked like Star Trek: The Next Generation. Like, this looks exactly like where, like, a group of Romulans would bring Picard. Or, like, where Q would, like, put humanity on trial and have Picard represent humanity, right? Mm-hmm. It is exactly one of those sets. With a octagonal door and everything else. But as soon as the trial starts, Vlad, Roger Daltrey, starts laughing. He rips his handcuffs off because apparently, on Draculon, they don't have handcuffs that are strong enough to hold natives of Draculon. And then he calls in his running crew, which is like two kind of nondescript, indistinct, dark-haired guys, and a woman who looks like sort of like a young Bernadette Peters, into the room, and they start shooting up the whole room, and they kill the entire tribunal. Then they run off and jump on a spaceship to get away. Just as they're leaving, Ella, who becomes Vampirella, is, like, walking into the room with, like, tea on a platter. Like, she's about to serve everybody in the tribunal chamber tea. And she just gets this horrified look on her face. And we've been talking about how bad Roger Daltrey is. Talisa Soto is only just a little better, if better at all.
I got a lot of thoughts about Talisa Soto in this movie. But yeah, she is, she's not good.
She gets on a ship and chases after them, but ends up getting caught in an ion cloud, which we see actually happening later in the movie, which is a really horribly terrible special effect sequence. She gets caught in an ion cloud and has to crash land on Mars. She can't make it all the way to Earth. And she ends up being on Earth for 3,000, or on Mars for 3,000 years, while Vlad and his crew go to Earth and basically set up a vampire empire. A vampire, if you will. And there's an explanation scene in the movie later on where Vampirella has apparently done a ton of research in her few days on Earth and learned that Vlad and his people have become mutated somehow by going into Earth's atmosphere so that they are now harmed by sunlight, which is not something that people from Draculon normally do. Instead of killing their victims when they bite them, they turn people into vampires by biting them. And there's some other weird characteristics about, like, what these mutated vampires do that people from Draculon don't do. Oh, it's something about, like, reacting badly to Christian symbolism. To, like, crucifixes and stuff. None of that actually harms Vampirella, but by virtue of coming into Earth's atmosphere, it damages Vlad and all the vampires that Vlad creates.
Yeah, they're like reverse Supermans, where they lose all their powers under the light of Earth's yellow sun.
Yes.
Now, so, Matt, it says in my notes right here, this is what I wrote down. This is a sentence I wrote down in my notebook. Let's talk for an hour about the thugs trying to steal this kid's 1996 desktop computer, which he is carrying through an alley.
Yes. So we actually open on present day. Does it open on the scene in Brazil, or does it open on the thing with Vampirella showing up?
No, I think we get Vampirella showing up first, and then we go to the desolate windswept hacienda that is Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Yes, the largest city in Brazil is one building that looks like it's in, some small town in Mexico.
It's someone's ranch in California is what it is.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But so Vampirella just materializes in the middle of an alley while these thugs are trying to steal an old 1996 computer. But one of the thugs says something to the guy whose name is Forry Ackerman, because yeah, he's named after Forrest Ackerman. One of the thugs says, like, I can't do my graphics on this piece of junk. And, like, slaps him around for a minute.
They're the two rawest graphic designers in the history of California.
Yeah, they gotta make some, like, employee training videos for fast food restaurants. And they can't do it on these computers.
I've gotten Dylan Todd to do a couple of different logos for me, and he has never pulled a switchblade on me, unlike these guys.
Seems weird. But just in that moment, Vampirella materializes and runs these two hard-ass graphic designers off. She asks the guy who he is. He says his name is Forry Ackerman. And then she's just like, all right, let's go back to your house. So that's what they do. They go back to Forry Ackerman's house.
I'm not done with this yet, Matt, because
okay,
I want to make it very clear, because this is the thing that got me the most about this movie. He's carrying a computer through an alley. He is carrying a 1996 desktop computer with a 15-inch CRT monitor through an alley.
And a tower
for
base.
For no reason.
Yeah.
That dude has an armload of at least 40 pounds of computer that he is just walking around with. Not in a box. It is a tower and a monitor.
I don't remember there being a keyboard and mouse. It's just the tower and the monitor. It's a very weird scenario that is never really explained in any acceptable way. Vampirella and Fauri go back to his apartment solely so he can give her an overcoat.
Well, he gives her an overcoat and he tells her that one of the guys that she's looking for, whose name is Trax, they can point her in that direction. Because Trax has been on Earth for 3,000 years and has never changed his name.
Yeah, he does.
He is still going to use the name Trax.
He does the 1996 equivalent of a Google search. I think he knows that Trax is a professor at UC Berkeley somehow.
Yes.
So he goes to the UC Berkeley website and looks up in the faculty database Trax, and there's just a profile picture that comes up with a little information, and it just says Professor Trax, professor of human physiology or whatever he's a professor of, only teaches classes at night.
That's because he's a vampire.
Yes.
But we are also meant to believe that this man got a job as a full professor at Berkeley in California without ever being in sunlight.
I don't know.
So we cut now to Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Well, okay, let's finish up the scene with Fauri Akerman, though, because this is where I think we have to get into talking about Vampirella's costume and Talisa Soto in general, because, first of all, Fauri gives her the overcoat because he basically says that she can't wear her costume just out and about. It's going to attract too much attention. So he gives her this overcoat. Vampirella costume in this movie is, I guess, in some ways, a valiant attempt to create the costume from the comics, but also make it something a real person could wear. And yet, it is terribly unflattering, and I've seen cosplayers wear such better costumes.
We should say, Talisa Soto's beautiful. She's a gorgeous young lady in this movie. They have given her the most unflattering possible version of this costume. Admittedly, now again, we have seen cosplayers as Vampirella, but admittedly, that is not a costume that is conducive to, you know, moving around or doing action scenes or, you know, any of the things that she is required to do on the set of a Vampirella movie. But the solution they come up with is, it's the worst of all worlds. It's uniquely unflattering on what is a very, very beautiful woman.
Yeah, it's got all these straps.
It's got weird straps. It's like, it's super high-waisted.
Yeah.
Which is really weird. Like, it makes her look frumpy when she is essentially wearing a swimsuit.
And she is anything but, right? Like, she should not look like that. And this costume just doesn't do her any favors at all. And like, you'd think that, I don't know, maybe clothing technology has changed considerably in the last 19 years. You know, one of the ways that cosplayers have figured out how to do costumes like Vampirella's are these, like, clear rubber straps, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like straps that you couldn't see unless you were looking closely for them. It seems like maybe they could have done that for this, but instead it's just this terrible costume.
I do not blame them for changing the costume at all. I think, like, I do not blame them for wanting to do something that was at least a little more practical. But again, they don't, like, it looks bad. It looks really bad.
And here's the really bad part. The boots are the same. So when she has to run, she is going so slowly because she's running in these terrible, unwearable high-heeled boots. So it just looks like Vampirella is the slowest runner. Because she's moving at a snail's pace. There's a scene where she's chasing Roger Daltrey at the end, and that's just like, he's moving at a pretty good clip, this 50-something-year-old man. And a woman in her 20s, who's in great shape, is going so much slower than him. It's awful. Okay, Cut to. Yeah,
and again, like the comic book version of that costume, it's literally just you draw a naked lady and then draw two red lines on it.
Yes.
And pretend they're clothes. So changing it is not the problem. That they change it to this is a real bad move. Real, real bad move.
Let me take this opportunity to also talk about Talisa Soto, the accent that she has in this movie. Now, perhaps she really does have an accent of some kind. According to IMDb, she was born in New York to a Puerto Rican family. But it seems like throughout this movie, she is putting on an accent. I don't remember her having an accent like this in the Mortal Kombat movies. And I do not know what she's going for. Because none of the other people from Draculon have accents, except for the one Irish guy. But I don't think he's supposed to be from Draculon.
I think he's supposed to be from Ireland.
He's an Earth vampire, right?
Like, Roger Daltrey has an accent, but it is not the accent that Vampirilla has.
It's an English accent. And then his two or three hench people all just sound American. But Talisa Soto has some unidentifiable accent that makes everything she says sound weird.
Well, and part of it is that also she's only expressing one emotion. She is, like, everything she says is very serious, and it's all said in this cadence with this kind of emotion put behind it. This is how she says every line.
Yeah.
Like, up to and including when she lands on Earth and defines the phrase, holy crap.
That's right. We didn't talk about that in the alley scene. One of the mean,
like when she's a robot for a minute.
Yeah. One of the mean graphic designers goes, holy crap, when she materializes in the alley. And the way that she responds to that is to define the word holy, define the word crap, and then define the term of art, holy crap, as if she's the Terminator. Like, in many ways, she is kind of portrayed here as the Terminator. Because she, like, does robot stuff when she first gets there. Then she has to, like, get human clothes to blend in. And she never really shows any emotion other than seriousness and having to, like, do her job. Like, she is on Earth to avenge the death of her stepfather, who she loved dearly, right? But you'd never get that sense.
Also, she consistently only refers to him as her stepfather, so get ready for an unexpected reveal in the third act.
That does not land at all. Let's cut to the ranch house that is Sao Paulo, Brazil. We have one of Vlad's generals, whose name I forget already, confronting...
I honestly could not tell you.
Yeah. Confronting, like, this drug lord slash crime lord vampire. Apparently there is a conflict here. Vlad and his people don't feel like this crime lord is giving proper deference to, you know, the vampire hierarchy. So they end up stringing this guy up upside on an upside down cross like they're about to kill him. As that's happening, this group called Purge, which is a covert undercover anti-vampire paramilitary organization, shows up and raids the compound. They capture that general of Vlad's and quickly take him back to the United States. Like, there's a very quick extradition back to the United States. Because this guy is the key to taking Purge back to Vlad. Now, clearly Purge has been working to kidnap or capture Vlad for decades.
Centuries.
Yeah, a very long time. Because the lead sort of paramilitary guy in the movie is Van Helsing. His name is Van Helsing.
I think his name is Christopher Van Helsing, which is my name.
That is your name. It's never strictly stated that he is a descendant of the original Van Helsing, who, you know, famously hunted Dracula. And there's a whole thing about how his father was in Purge, and Vlad, in a very mean trick, decided to turn this Van Helsing's dad into a vampire, and then he had to kill him. So there's a long history, a very long history, of Purge hunting Vlad. But they don't know what he looks like. Here's how we discover that they don't know what he looks like. Vampirella goes to the university, to Berkeley, and finds this guy, is it Trax?
Yes, it's Trax, who works at the university.
Now, she encounters Trax and finds him in his classroom after having just completed one of his night classes, because he only teaches night classes. He recognizes her and says, you know what, I was involved in the group that killed your stepdad centuries ago. I feel terrible about that, and I wish I hadn't done it. Please forgive me. I don't know anything about Vlad or any of his people. I wish I could help you, but I can't. And she does not take any of that for an answer, tosses him out a window, and impales him on a very convenient, like, sharpened pole outside his window at UC Berkeley.
Yeah, and then Vampirella goes to kill his children.
Yes, because just before that, she points to a picture on his desk and says, is that your family? And he goes, well, yeah, it's my current family. Because, you know, he's 5,000 years old, and thus...
Which is a weird distinction to make.
Yeah, but he's like, yeah, that's my family. So she goes to his house and goes into his children's bedroom and looks like she is about to murder the shit out of his children when she notices a poster on the wall for a rock star named Jamie Blood. Jamie Blood is Vlad. He looks exactly like Roger Daltrey. He's apparently a very famous musician who performs regularly in Las Vegas, but also seems to just be very, very popular.
We gotta unpack this though, Matt, because okay. he's a famous musician who looks exactly like Roger Daltrey, but with a single hair extension.
Yes, on the side of his head, which we later discover is just a clip-on extension.
Which is hilarious, because at one point when he is found out, when Purge discovers who he is, he takes it, he pulls it off of his head and says, the game is up, or whatever he says, as though he is Clark Kent taking off his glasses.
Yeah, apparently that one hair extension has been concealing his identity for however long he's been under the guise of Jamie Blood. Because despite the fact that he killed or made Van Helsing's father into a vampire, that Purge has been hunting him for decades, if not centuries, nobody knows that this very famous rock star, who has obvious vampire fangs, is...
Sometimes. He only has them sometimes.
I think he has them most of the time. Nobody knows that he is Vlad the Vampire, who it is strongly implied is actually Dracula. At one point, Roger Daltrey just says, I am Dracula.
I am Dracula Eternal.
Yeah.
Which is a weekly comic I would read.
Sure.
Now, I do want to point out, okay, so that's the first thing. He has disguised himself with a single hair extension.
And
the
same thing. I just want to take this opportunity to point out that if you watch Red Dwarf, he just looks like a white version of the cat from Red Dwarf. Clothes, fangs, hair, everything. He just, and even like the way he acts and speaks, he seems like the cat from Red Dwarf. It was so weird to me, everything he did throughout this part of the movie, because it just looked like he was acting like the cat.
Now, the second thing that I want to mention is that it's Roger Daltrey, and at the time of the filming of this movie, he was 52 years old, which isn't super old. But I think it's fair to say that Roger Daltrey probably had a hard, like, lived hard for a couple decades.
Yeah.
And he just, like, he wears his years. And I bring this up because there is a poster of Jamie Blood in the bedroom of, like, a 13-year-old girl.
At the oldest, she's 13.
And it just says, Jamie Blood rocks, with a very unflattering picture of Roger Daltrey.
And a Ren and Stimpy font.
Yes. The third thing that I want to unpack about this is that he could choose any name. He could choose literally any name. It's a fake name. It's made up. Jamie Blood is a terrible name. No, I actually did look up Jamie Blood because I wanted to see if this was a character from the Vampirella comics or if this is something that they created for the movie. I wanted to know how far along they were in getting Roger Daltrey before they decided to make the evil vampire a rock star. I did not find anything for Jamie Blood in the comics. There is an actual musician named Jamie Blood, though, and I'm sure she is super stoked about the Vampirella movie. But yeah, Jamie Blood is not a threatening name.
No.
Not a great name for a supervillain.
Also not a great name for a vampire who's trying to hide who he is.
Well, I think he's trying to hide who he is. The song that he sings, which is on the scale of Who songs, I would put it like 8 or 9 spots above Eminence Front.
He does not sing Eminence Front, so I mean, you got to give him that.
Does he not? Okay, okay.
That's a Pete Townsend sung song.
Okay, okay. Fair then, fair. It is not a bad song.
It's not good.
It's not good, but for a 1996 song performed in the Vampirella soundtrack, it is shockingly good.
It's titled Bleed For Me, and is exactly what it sounds like.
Like, clearly he's a vampire-themed rock star. Like, he has blood on his mouth when he performs, which is actually just, like, bad lipstick.
Yeah, it just looks like he smudged his lipstick. It does not look like blood is on his mouth. So, at Purge headquarters, which is, like, underneath a toy store, there's a scene of Van Helsing going into this store, walking into the back, opening up a wardrobe, and then there being an elevator in there that takes him down to Purge headquarters. In Purge headquarters, this general that was kidnapped in Brazil is being interrogated using torture tactics. And the torture tactic is that Van Helsing takes a syringe, puts it into a bottle, a branded bottle of holy water, blessed by the Pope, and he fills the syringe with the holy water. He puts it on the vampire's arm and threatens to inject him with holy water if he doesn't start talking.
Matt, I gotta say, you, even at the time, you were like, I can't believe that bottle is branded.
Yeah.
I can't believe that bottle says, like, is a specific holy water bottle. But Matt, if you have holy water blessed by the Pope, are you just, like, are you not going to put it in a clearly labeled bottle?
I mean, I guess that's fair. The lieutenant, or, like, is he, like, the chief of Purge? He's the commanding officer of Van Helsing. I know that much. He's also in the room. And he tells the general guy, like, you know what happens when a vampire gets injected with holy water? They turn into jelly. And Van Helsing's like, I'm giving you 5 seconds before I inject you with this holy water. He counts down from 5. Then the vampire's just kind of like, you will never do it. You'll never do it. He hesitates for even longer. And then finally he jams the syringe in the guy's arm and is about to hit the plunger before finally the guy says that Vlad is actually Jamie Blood, who is based in Las Vegas.
Yeah. It's the fact that he says, I'm going to count to 5, and then he counts to 5 and then goes, okay, are you sure you don't want to? That's all. Like,
yeah.
I'll really do it. It's rough. So from there we cut to Vegas. That's when we see Jamie Blood performing.
Yeah, and Vampirella is actually in the audience for that performance. And there are these weird...
Which is hilarious, because she is in the audience wearing her Vampirella costume.
She's not wearing the overcoat anymore. And everyone else is, like, dancing around to the song. This is where we actually see Forrest Ackerman, because he's in the crowd dancing. There's one weird part where, in the lyrics to the song, Roger Daltrey says, like, "It's only you and me now. It's just us two." And everybody in the room disappears except for Vampirella. And then in the next shot, everybody's back. It's like they were trying to make a music video.
It's rough, is what it is.
After their performance ends.
And what does she call? Does she call him Mr. Blood?
She calls him Mr. Blood.
And he goes, "That's what the suits call me."
Yeah.
"You can call me Jamie."
Yeah. So he comes over to where she's sitting because he's like magnetically attracted to her, but he doesn't recognize her. Even though they clearly knew each other on Draculon, right?
I don't think they did. I think it is much more likely that she would know him as a famous criminal than he would know her as just, you know, the tall man's daughter.
But yeah, but he was like the, you know, chief counselor. And she was his stepdaughter. It seems like he would know her. But nonetheless, he does not recognize her. He comes over and he starts kind of trying to make a move on her. He asks her what her name is. She says it's Vampirella because there was a scene with Forry Ackerman earlier where she said that her name on Draculon was Ella. And he's like, "Vampirella. Vampirella."
Actually, he says Ella the Vampire Girl, even though she has not displayed fangs or sucked blood or any of that. Also, Vampirella is not in the room when that is said.
Yeah, but somehow, I guess she's got really great hearing and she heard it. So she tells him her name is Vampirella. They go out back at the casino, and the area behind the casino is just like barren salt flat desert.
It's a desert.
And they start making out. But then she is trying to like make a move on him when Purge shows up. And there's this awful but great in its awfulness Roger Daltrey line delivery where he actually like backhands her, knocks her down, and he goes, "You bitch, you sold me out." And we both laughed out loud pretty hard at that. Purge pulls out their like special guns that shoot stakes, wooden stakes. They hold both Vampirella and Vlad at gunpoint. They also have like lamps that seem like they're supposed to simulate sunlight. And Vlad and Vampirella both hold their hands up and show their fangs, as if those lights are harming them. Even though we later find out that Vampirella isn't harmed by sunlight. So either
I think that's just because they're shining some lights on them.
I guess.
And they were making out in the dark, getting ready to bite each other's necks.
Either she's pretending that sunlight affects her, or there's not a lot of consistency in this movie. One or the other. Both Vampirella and Vlad are arrested. Vlad goes into the truck that Van Helsing is in.
Vampirella is arrested by Joe Latrulio.
Yeah, an actor who looks a lot like Joe Latrulio.
But like Joe Latrulio in a wig playing a part.
It looks like Joe Latrulio trying to look like Matt Berry. That's who this guy looks like.
There's a great moment where Joe Latrulio looks up at his guys and he's like, "Cuff her, put her in my transport." And then he goes over to Van Helsing, and he goes, "Area secure, we got that other one." And, like, he has been, all of this has happened within, like, a 10-foot radius. And Van Helsing goes, "Good, put her in cuffs, put her in your van." And he goes, "Already on it, sir." It's a very, like, if Andy Samberg was playing Van Helsing, this movie would be 10 times better, I think, is what I'm getting at.
Instead, the guy who plays Van Helsing, I'm originally pegged as sort of like a poor man's Kyle MacLachlan, but then he started looking more and more like Michael Ian Black, as if this whole thing is just one big state sketch, like one big state piss take on a bad Showtime movie. So Vampirella's in the transport with Matt Berry slash Joe Latrulio, and there's this really weird moment where Joe Latrulio tells the other guy in the back of the van, "Hey, head up to the front. I want to talk to this little vampire alone." And it looks like he's going to do some gross shit to Vampirella. But before that can happen, Vlad hypnotizes the driver of his van, making him fall asleep. And he starts running his van into the motorcycles in front of him. Now, the motorcycle drivers, instead of just speeding up or like veering off, just like allow themselves to continue to get hit by this van to the point where the van like knocks them into other cars and they go flying. Those are actually some pretty okay looking stunts. The stunt that follows that, where the van veers off and hits a car, is the most ridiculous, like, sped up film stunt that you could possibly imagine. I've seen better car crash stunts in, like, old silent films. It looked awful. I couldn't handle how bad it was. Vlad's people show up, get him, take him back to their hideout, which is, like, an old Western movie set, I think? Is that what it's supposed to be? Or like a ghost town?
I have no idea.
I guess it's a ghost town. It's like an old Western town.
Have we talked about the Vlad's henchmen burning the dude's dick off with sunlight yet?
Wait, when did that happen?
When they have him crucified upside down in Brazil and they start shooting holes in the roof to burn his dick. Like, did you not notice they were literally burning his dick off with sunlight?
I did not catch that part. Okay, they were burning that guy's dick off. Okay.
Yeah, they have him crucified upside down and they're shooting holes in the roof and you can see, like, the sunlight come in and it's, like, the first one, like, is on his gut and the second one is, like, right on his crotch. And he's like, "Ah, you bastards, kill me." And also, did we talk about how the henchman was wearing a Kraftwerk suit?
Okay, so yes, all of Vlad's henchmen in that part are wearing these weird Autobahn from Big Lebowski rubber suits with, like, head pieces, like cowls that are kind of rubbery. And those are later explained to be sun suits, suits that protect vampires from sunlight, even though it doesn't cover their faces. And they just look like scuba diving outfits.
Well, they look like bondage suits is what they look like.
Yeah, it's really goofy.
But, like, you know, in the 90s when people were still trying to figure out bondage.
Yeah.
Like, but they weren't quite sure what – it looks like something you'd see on, like, Real Sex 8.
Kind of throughout the movie, we see – Vlad and his people continue to wear these weird sun suits.
Yeah.
Anyway, Van Helsing gets thrown from his van, and we see Vampirella kind of like trying to catch up to Vlad, but not being able to get him. And Van Helsing notices this, and he asks Vampirella for help. So she comes over and helps him up, takes him to a hotel. And they sit in a hotel for a while and talk about how they're both trying to catch Vlad. Both of their goals is to take care of Vlad. And they share how Vlad killed both of their fathers. Or in Vampirella's case, her stepfather. There's also a weird moment in the hotel where Vampirella is asking Van Helsing, like, what the point of Purge is. Like, what Purge does. And he explains, like, well, we think humans have particular rights, and we're just trying to protect those rights while vampires roam the earth. And then she goes, well, what about my rights? She goes, this is what I am. And she, like, turns around and then turns back, and she's got red eyes and fangs. Then she turns around again, like she's, like, taking off makeup or taking out fake teeth or something. And then she turns around and her eyes are back to normal and her fangs are not as big. And she goes, but this is who I am. And Van Helsing kind of nods like she made a great point. But I don't really even get what point she was trying to make.
It's also so weird that they're having a conversation about rights when, they eat people.
Yeah.
You do not need to put this in the context. Like, you are not dealing with a metaphor in this situation.
Well,
you are dealing with vampires who eat people.
There's a flashback right around here where it's revealed that Ella's stepmother, or adopted mother, has created a synthetic blood that you only have to drink a very little bit of to get, your full nutritional value. And Vampirella has a little utility band full of capsules that have that synthetic blood in it. And her mother tells her that there's a lifetime supply of food, of blood, in that band. Now, here's what I don't understand. Vampires are immortal, right?
So yes.
Whose lifetime?
Well, there's clearly at least 3,000 years worth.
Yes, because she was able to live comfortably on Mars, right? But then, yes. Once she gets to Earth, we see her drink the blood, an entire vial at one point. After she kills Trax, she drinks one of those vials. Within a couple of days, she is absolutely starving for blood, and that becomes a plot point.
Yeah, it's this weird, Aquaman plot point where she has to have blood once every 24 hours or she'll become a feral vampire. None of this makes sense. I think it's just there to give a reason for her to wear a bracelet on her arm like she does in the comic, which this movie does not need.
And
Can we skip to the end?
It's also an explanation for how she lived for 30 centuries on Mars, right?
Yeah, because we do see her, later she's going to explain that she was on Mars. Because there's a part where the guys at The Purge, not to be confused with the film The Purge, see footage of a space shuttle coming back from Mars. And there's clearly a bat flying through an open door.
Yes. As the shuttle is landing, somebody just opened a door to let some air in, I guess. And this bat is flying out. We can kind of blow through the next little bit of the movie, because the middle, there's not a lot going on in the middle of this movie. Vampirella goes to Purge headquarters. Van Helsing is trying to tell his boss about how it's really important that they work with Vampirella because she wants to take care of Vlad too. But the boss doesn't trust her. He thinks that she's a spy sent by Vlad to come take down Purge. So he doesn't trust her at all. There's a little bit of
unnecessary plot complication.
Yeah. In the various machinations that happen after this, Van Helsing ends up getting kidnapped. He ends up getting captured by Vlad and his people. So, Vlad and his people have Van Helsing. Purge has that general of Vlad's that they interrogated. So, Vlad proposes a prisoner exchange. And the boss of Purge tells Vampirella that he is going to force her to go carry out the prisoner exchange. So, they all meet in this, junkyard for old casino signs? That is the setting of this scene. Vampirella has that general guy with her. Vlad, who does not actually show up at this thing, all his people show up with somebody who looks like Van Helsing, but he talks super weird. He's got this super deep voice. But they decide to go through with the exchange anyway. She sends over that general guy. They send over the guy who looks like Van Helsing. She immediately recognizes that he's not Van Helsing when he finally gets to her. So she knocks him down. He transforms into a vampire guy. And she starts asking where the real Van Helsing is. They say, he's safe with us, but you're going to have to come get him because Judgment Night is coming. Some Purge snipers show up and start just trying to shoot everybody. They try to shoot all the vampires. They kill two of them, and three of them, including Vampirella, get away. this is where the boss of Purge decides that maybe he made the wrong decision by not trusting Vampirella, and he goes and has an extended prayer scene.
In the weirdest church. Like, there is, like, he goes up to the front of this church that looks like it's just like a conference room in an office. And just like he's staring at the cross, but in order to be eye level with the cross, he literally has to get down on one knee. So the cross is at knee height. The cross is like waist high mounted on the wall, which is a weird thing that I have never seen. Like, I don't know. I was raised Protestant, so.
Look, I guess Purge didn't have a huge budget for their in-house chapel, right? But his prayer is so, like, out of a Left Behind movie. It is exactly a Kirk Cameron Left Behind prayer.
It really is.
Which is such a weird thing to have in a movie with titties in it, right?
Right.
Oh, that is how Van Helsing gets kidnapped, by the way. He goes home to his apartment. He gets momentarily distracted by titties, and another vampire lady knocks him out. That is the entirety of the plan that gets him kidnapped.
Look, if it works, it's a good plan, right?
I guess so. So here's what's going on with Vlad during all of this. At his weird...
Are we talking about Vlad's satellite? is that what we're going to talk about?
Yes, at his weird ghost town headquarters, he has called in the Council of 12, the 12 most important vampires in the world. They have all gathered so they can discuss the details of what is going to happen during Judgment Night. It involves a satellite. That is all I get about it. Because the way you described it, Chris, is that Vlad's explanation for what he's actually planning to do at Judgment Night is just a bunch of science words.
Yes, he talks about it being bioreflective and carbon-based. But what it is going to do is it's going to create a nuclear winter, but without the explosions. So I think what it's going to do is just going to like spray a bunch of dust on the world.
And I guess the plan is to permanently block out the sun so that the vampires can run wild all the time.
Yeah. That should not be a huge concern for vampires, I think, because like, they still have half the day now.
Yeah.
Like, they should be able to get it done with that.
But now they're going to have a full 24, I suppose. Maybe they're also going to kill all of humanity with this? I really could not follow anything that he was trying to explain at this point in the movie.
They're going
to
kill humanity. They also talk about how they use the satellite to monitor and influence the world events to, you know, as they choose. And I'm trying to figure out, like, wait, how long has that satellite been up there then? Like, is that something they put in orbit on their way to Earth? Or is that something that, like, do the vampires have a separate space program? And if it's more advanced than ours, why didn't they go to Mars and kill Vampirella during that 3,000 years? Why did they send John Landis?
All good questions that we will not answer.
Now, fortunately, this bioreflective carbon-based satellite is controlled by one television.
We'll get to that in a minute. Vampirella shows up at the compound, ready to confront Vlad and all his people. But they get the jump on her, and it looks like they're going to kill her. But Vlad doesn't want to kill her. He wants to bring Vampirella over to his side because he recognized immediately when she showed up that they had a connection because she's from a region of Draculon that's very close to the region that he was from. This seems to be a scene where he is revealing that if he's not her father, he's at least a close relative of hers. But he never states it, and she outright asks him, "Are you related to me?" And he doesn't answer. He just says, like, "Oh, even closer than that." And that's all we get. Like, we never even get...
I don't know what is closer than being related to her.
Yeah, there's no, like, revelation of how they're related or whether he's her real dad or what. It never happens. It's awful. But... he decides that he's going to test her and try to make her into a vampire more like him and his kind by putting her, locking her in a room with Van Helsing, because he knows that she's going to get hungry. They take away her little armband. They put her in the room and they say, you're going to have to drain all his blood before the night is out, and then you'll be one of us. That's not what happens. Instead, Van Helsing just invites her to drink a little bit of blood, as much as she needs, from his wrist. And that works out just fine. Like, they come and get Vampirella later, and she is not one of them because she drank just a little bit of Van Helsing's blood, and that's all she needed. She didn't drain him and kill him, like they thought she was going to have to. She just drank a little bit, and that was okay. Portion control. That's what ultimately saves Vampirella in this movie. So, there's some kind of thing where Roger Daltrey and his top female henchmen, they set a countdown clock for 24 hours to do something with the satellite. But Vampirella comes busting into the room where all the computer equipment are for the satellite. She picks up one gun. She picks up a gun. She shoots one computer, and the satellite disappears.
The one that's in space.
Yes.
The satellite that's in space.
It dematerializes. It vaporizes. All she has to do is shoot a computer screen, and it doesn't just deactivate. It disappears.
Yeah, it's... There are worse resolutions for evil plots that were introduced 10 minutes before the end of the movie, but I cannot bring any to mind right now.
Purge shows up in the midst of all of this, takes down a whole bunch of the vampires. There's a scene where Van Helsing and his boss meet back up, and the boss kind of admits that he was wrong for not trusting Vampirella. And now she's finally going to go get revenge on Vlad. They go to the Hoover Dam. She chases him up the Hoover Dam. And this is the scene where she's just running so slowly because she's got these terrible heels that she has to wear. They get to the top of the Hoover Dam. There's a little bit of a standoff, a little bit of a fight, a very badly choreographed fight scene. It ends with her grabbing a metal spike. It's not wood. It's metal. She grabs a metal spike. She throws it at Vlad. It goes into his chest. There's a lightning strike, and then he is immediately an inferno of fire. He doesn't just catch on fire. He is ablaze. And then he falls to his death off of the Hoover Dam. Credits.
Vampirella will be back.
What is the sequel that gets promised?
I do not remember.
Like Dark Death Dealer or something like that?
I thought it was like Blood Vengeance or...
Whatever it is, there is a promise for a sequel that we never got. All right, Chris, let's discuss what high points we have, if any, from the movie adaptation of Vampirella.
Song's not bad.
That one song is okay, but it's not good.
Roger Daltrey actually gets better at acting as the movie goes on, which we talked about while we were watching it, and made me think that they filmed it in order.
I like Angus Scrimm.
Angus Scrimm's actually really good. Like he is actually going for it in his scenes.
Yeah. Like, his death scene is one of those, he was definitely dead, and then somebody, like, sits over him for a minute, and he has to have more stuff to say. So he's, like, gasping out, like, don't get taken over by vengeance. Love you. And that's literally his last words. He just says, love you. The writing is terrible, but Angus Scrimm, the actor, really goes for it.
Yeah. He makes the most of his screen time, which is nice.
Those stunts where the motorcycles hit the cars and the motorcycle drivers like kind of flip over, those aren't bad. We're really stretching here, but I think that's all we have.
That's it.
Okay, low points of Vampirella. Talisa Soto's acting, Roger Daltrey's acting, an absolutely abysmally terrible script, terrible production values, terrible special effects. We didn't even talk about the characters when they turn into bats. Like, anytime anybody turns into a bat, they just hold their arms up, and then there's this weird quick change where they turn into a black blur that just goes off the screen in a diagonal line.
Again, the costume is terrible. Like, the Vampirella costume. Like you have to really work to make Talisa Soto not look good. And it is really bad.
They did it. I'd say all the costumes are bad. Not just hers. Those terrible sun suits that look just goofy as hell. Really bad. Everything that Vlad wears looks terrible. No good costumes. The like lighting is very like flat TV lighting. The sets look so fucking cheap.
Yeah, it's like, and the thing is, most of it is just mediocre and boring. Like, there's nothing in it except for like, I mean, Roger Daltrey's bad, but he's bad in a very entertaining way. But there's nothing much else in it that is bad enough to be enjoyable. Like, I could literally talk for an hour about the scene of Forry Ackerman carrying his desktop computer through an alley. Like, I want the backstory on that. But that is a high point that happens early, and it is a big downhill drop from there.
Yeah, Roger Daltrey and Talisa Soto are sort of like opposite ends of the bad acting spectrum, right? Roger Daltrey is playing everything way too big and like seems to think that just the act of breaking some handcuffs, which he does on two separate occasions, is, you know, something that looks so cool and that's going to make him this badass bad guy. Where Talisa Soto has one expression and like one setting of acting where everything is just white noise. I feel like Vampirella needs so much more personality than she seems capable of giving her.
Yeah, it's rough.
All right, let's give our final thoughts on 1996's Vampirella.
I mentioned earlier that I was aware of this movie during its production and when it came out, mainly because it was covered in Wizard magazine. Because where else are you going to cover the direct-to-Showtime Vampirella movie in 1996? That's the story they were made to cover. And again, my disappointment in it is, I think, completely different, but just as much watching it almost 20 years after the fact.
I can tolerate a bad movie if it manages to be fun. This one doesn't even approach it. It doesn't even get into the neighborhood of being fun. It is
ridiculously complicated.
Yeah.
I mean, to their credit, maybe I should have mentioned this under high points, but to their credit, they do try to blend the sci-fi and horror elements that were originally part of Vampirella, right? They do try to, you know, throw in Planet Draculon and, oh, hey, it's a weird space problem at the end, but they're also vampires. And that's admirable. Because, you know, at the time in the comics, there were, like, different origins for Vampirella kind of vying for supremacy. The fact that they tried says something, but they ended up being mega complicated.
Much to the detriment of this movie being enjoyable in any way. It just fails on every conceivable level to be even mildly entertaining. I understand why we had such a hard time finding it, because this is not some old hidden gem that you get a group of friends together and try to watch. It just deserves to be forgotten.
There are more entertaining Roger Corman movies, and I mean, I'd rather watch Blood Rain again.
Me too. Weirdly enough, Blood Rain wins out in the Blood Rain versus Vampirella battle. Who would have thought? Yeah. All right, that's it for the first installment of Spooktoberfest here on Movie Fighters. If you would like to suggest a movie for us to watch next time or somewhere down the line, you can do that at moviefighterscast@gmail.com. That's our email address. Our music was composed by Michael Kill. Our website was designed by Sean Bogus. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another spooky movie. Until then, everybody, see you soon.
This has been a Kaleidos Media production.